Hello. Hello, people. Hello, my name is Sabrina George, and welcome to Secrets of Desperate Performers. I'm assuming at some stage, they might say it's not true, but I'm assuming at some stage everybody on this panel has been a desperate performer or desperate to perform, or has been trying to perform and has reached a state of desperation and had to do something about it. I'm going to ask them all generic questions about performing and aspects of performing. Is anyone here a performer or frustrated performer? Oh, bless you, darling. What are you? Which arena? An actor. Grand. And do you understand the process of frustration or not particularly of desperation? Yeah, good man. Anyone else here got any professional you are?
Tiny amount.
You're sorry?
Tiny amount.
Of acting.
That's close.
All right.
Not very well.
Well, you might get some hints, or you might be sort of think you're not desperate enough to do it. My name's Sabrina George, as I say. I'm doing a show also this evening. I'm a stand-up comic at 7:10 in this venue called Crime Comedy and Me, which is about my life in crime. And young Penny Ashton over there, she's hails from Kiwiland, and she's doing a show called MC Busty Rhymes.
MC Hot Pink and Busty Rhymes.
And she'll tell you more about it. She's been getting 5-star reviews, rave reviews, but she's your journalist, singer, poet, stand-up, MC. In fact, she's a bit of a clever clogs all round. She's obviously got a desperate on many different arenas.
Yeah.
And then here is young Brendan Burke, who's a stand-up primarily, but also done Father Ted and all sorts of important things like that. Also getting rave reviews at the Pleasance. No, you're at the Café Royal, aren't you?
Café Royal.
Doing his own show there. He's someone who's also been to Edinburgh a few times in the Fringe. And young Emma here, do you want to... I actually don't... You're an actor. You're doing a show... Because you only arrived yesterday, you see, so I haven't got...
And I've been dragged in. My show hasn't opened yet, even. So I've been manically doing...
What's your show called?
Show called Being Gertrude Stein, about a writer called Gertrude Stein, who was around in the 30s, who was with Picasso and Dali and did lots of surrealist stuff, which is...
That's good.
That's a good introduction, isn't it? Mm. And what time?
Oh, at 2:40 every day from tomorrow.
Oh,
so if you want to see a premiere show, first forever in the world, you've acted and written it.
And directed?
Not directed.
Not directed.
Directed by my theatre company, Pulse, with my director, Hector Harkness.
Grand. And young Stevie Williams here. He has kept me, and I totally believe it, although some people say I'm falling for a bit of a con, that he's actually been brought up by a circus family and started life as a clown. And I believe it. I choose to believe that. And he's a stand-up comic and MC of great renown. He's doing a show at the...
Café Royale, Royal Picture.
And I think you're doing the Tron tonight.
Yeah, I'm doing the Tron with Eddie Brimson at 3:00.
So Stevie Williams, and he's originally from Newport in Wales. So I'm going to start, basically I'm going to ask questions, it might turn into discussion, which is fine. When you look bored, I'll cut the discussion and get you to vote on who's been the most honest. They're allowed to lie. I'm not going to tell you whether they're lying or not, because I don't know. I believe everything they say. Or they could be brutally honest. I have no idea. So can I start off, Penny, with you?
Uh-huh.
What point did you make the decision that whatever you were doing, you were going to move into being a performer? Which one did you choose? Do you remember the exact moment?
I was probably about 4. I went to see Bad Jelly the Witch, and I went, I want to do that. And I actually was going to be a ballerina for a really long time, until puberty, and that changed that idea. And then so I thought I might be an actor, and I tried to do that for quite a while, and I wasn't getting a lot of success doing that, and I got really frustrated, and I wrote a poem. And I thought that actually was quite cool, and I wrote more poems, and then I eventually got to a point where I started performing the poetry, and that's what my show is here. But also, I do act and stuff like that when the opportunity arises, which isn't that frequently a lot. In New Zealand, it's quite hard, because you have to have a number of fingers and a number of pies to actually make a living as a performer, which is why I've sort of sought various different avenues to...
I thought everyone acted in Lord of the Rings in New Zealand.
No, I didn't, but
you
I know
didn't.
A lot of people
only
that
only one who didn't.
Yes, pretty much.
On holiday.
I was the only one that didn't get thanked at the Oscars.
Show us your feet. Show us your feet.
Not hairy at all.
No Hobbit action there.
No, not at all.
So did you actually go to drama school?
No, I did a drama degree at Canterbury in Christchurch in New Zealand.
Mm.
And then after that, came to London for 3 years and worked in bars and stuff like that, as you tend to do. And then got
did you
home.
Say, I have a drama degree rather than a drama diploma?
Well, it is a degree. It's more theoretical. You know, so we sort of studied about how you might act if you did. And whenever we did, like, our... professor was a bit of a, he just tried to get along with the students basically, so I don't hold that much high esteem as a degree. Really.
Would you interrupt people and go, excuse me, it's a degree, not a diploma, thank you.
Not Teutonism, but Mother Love Style.
Do we have drama diplomas in Britain?
Well, we can, don't we?
Yeah, but
I thought everybody's got a degree.
Yeah.
Even a weekend workshop, you've got a degree.
These courses are how you start on a Thursday and you have a diploma up on Monday morning.
Right, not an MBQ.
I'm an actor.
I'm an actor. Did you do any acting in London?
No, I didn't try. I just figured there's so many people trying to do it there.
So you did 3 years of bar work and now
I bar work. I worked for the Conservative Party for 7 months as a temp.
Ooh.
I know.
Yes,
but I was a temp. It was very interesting. The guy that was in charge didn't have a clue what was going on.
It's brilliant.
So you got lots of material?
No, I didn't. I haven't really used that much at all. But it was, it was all sort of skills that I learned, because I produced myself and I publicised myself as well. And so it was all skills and admin and stuff that I used later on.
Grand. What about you, Brendan? Do you remember that glorious moment when you stopped pulling pints and you went, enough, I'm special?
Well, I was a microbiologist, and I went out to the Irish Hospital in Baghdad in 1985, and we had a Christmas concert for all the Irish medical workers out there, and it was Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. And I was in that, and it was my first time on stage, and Uday Hussein was in the audience, son of Saddam, and we found out later on, and I don't think he was reviewing the show, but he was still there anyway, and it was my first taste of being on stage in front of 400 or 500 people, and I was impersonating some of the staff in the hospital, so if you were there or anybody else outside was there, wouldn't have a fucking clue what was going on, but it seemed to work.
Do one of the impressions now.
Go on.
Or Uday.
Of Uday? Actually, I can do an impersonation of the night we were in our villa, our Irish villa. I can impersonate, not impersonate a person, but I can perhaps sort of relive the event, because it was actually, I think it was the second night, and a missile came in from Tehran. It was during the Iran-Iraq war, and it was pretty scary, and it kind of, that particular night, brought it home to me how important alcohol is to the Irish people, and because you haven't lived until you've been in an Irish bar in Baghdad, I tell you, and we were all in our Irish villa. One night, and this guy Frank was in front of me, his pint was on the bar, and a missile was on its way from Tehran, we didn't know, and we're all in our Irish bar, could be an Irish bar anywhere, give us 3 points of Guinness, 2 points of Heineken, and put us on a short, put us on a slow one as well, will you please, a missile, meanwhile back in the Irish bar, and don't close the bar like you did last night, pal, right, we're Irish, you understand, right, flash the lights, meanwhile back in the Irish bar, as I was walking past your window, anyway, Frank in front of me, points on the bar, missile slammed into this bridge down the road, this is true, this actually happened, slammed into this bridge down the road, boom, the whole place, and Frank in front of me went, Jesus, me pint. Was that a bomb, was it? Fucking eye, I told her what. That's true.
So then you came back to Ireland.
So I came back to Ireland,
that was a piece of paint.
And I put on my white coat again, and looking down the microscope, and in the silence of a microbiology lab, and I said,
what's microbiology?
The study of
biology but smaller.
Yes.
What is it?
Very little biology.
Smaller test tubes, like that. Bunsen burner, that big.
Yeah. It's analysis of bacterial infection.
Oh, is it?
Yes.
You're in the right place, Max.
So that's what I do. So you give me one of your specimens, I find out what is the organism that's causing the infection, and I find
through the microscope.
I find the appropriate antibiotic
taste
to cure your ailment.
Oh, do you? Mm-hmm. Oh, fucking cool, Brendan. What are you doing on here? You're clever.
How long ago was that?
But I gave it up 10 years ago.
Okay.
So did you go on the open spot circuit and work your way up?
I was going out with this girl, and I broke up with her, and she broke my heart into a million pieces. So my first stand-up was talking about that, and everyone laughed.
Much like that.
And I said, ooh, that was a bit of therapy.
Yeah, it's quite cathartic at times.
Yeah. So the fact that everyone laughed at my misery, I said, I think I'll do this for a living. Since then, everyone's been laughing at my misery.
Oh, God, it's beyond now. No, what about you, darling?
I was at school, and I was about 8 or 9. And I remember I was hanging out with 3 girls who were just awful now, thinking back to it. And I was getting bullied quite a bit in the playground and stuff. And I came home one day, these 3 girls who now all have 3 kids each. So I came home one day and I remember I was in floods of tears and my dad just went, you know, what's going on? And I'm only child and my dad kind of, you know, brought me up as, you know, proper boy as well as girl, because I think he wanted a boy but he ended up with a girl. And so we went, right, okay, so we got a big, big cardboard box in the living room and just got me to punch it from one side of the room to the other side of the room. And was just like, right, okay, so when you go in there tomorrow, you just got to go and punch it. At this point, my mum came home and overheard and went, Emma, no, I just don't think... Like, took me aside, not wanting to undermine Dad's authority. She went, why don't you go and hang out with the nice girls instead of punching them? So I did take her advice, thank God. My clever mother.
I'm in jail.
Exactly, with 3 kids. Great! Yeah. So I took my mum's advice instead of my dad's. And I went and hang out with the lovely girls who all did drama. And I just joined their drama club. And my first role that I got with them was Peter Pan. And I remember I got a smaller role in the first thing. We were doing Alice in Wonderland, and I got the Cheshire Cat. Oh, God, and I must have been such a nasty little diva. Because apparently, I can't remember this at all. Blocked it out of my memory. I went, I'm not doing this because I want to be Alice. And yeah. I didn't do it.
I was a nasty little diva when I was 8 or 9 as a ballerina. I was like, I want to be first in all the competitions. Yeah, and then I didn't. I cried when I got second, which is pathetic.
I completely wouldn't do it because I wasn't the main part. And then the next time, I got the main part. And so I got my Peter Pan. And it was all great and it was all great until I found out that we were actually going up on wires. And I was flying. And this was when I was about 10, and I can remember this really well. And the first time that I met the guy who was flying me, he had a can of Stella in his hand. Or Stella, it was beer to me. And I remember kind of looking at him and thinking, oh, I think that's a bit wrong. Like, I couldn't quite work, I was 10, I couldn't quite work out what was. And I did get smashed into the scenery about 3 or 4 times.
God.
Properly just up and into it.
And you thought, I love this.
Yeah, I was just like, I quite liked the guys that bullied me. At least I didn't get smashed into walls.
Across the room.
Yeah, used dance technique. And yeah, and so I started off doing musical theatre stuff, and did that until I came to Edinburgh with a musical when I was about 16, and hated it so much. It completely put me off all of the kind of prima donna-y musical stuff. I think I swung right the other way, and from then on, prima donna stuff went completely. And this is my first time back to Edinburgh since then.
And did you go to drama college?
I did. Yeah. I went to Central in London. My time in Edinburgh made me go off musicals.
So did you didn't actually make a decision, you sort of morphed into it through having 3 nasty friends.
Yeah.
And you
and
it.
I thank those nasty friends for actually being so goddamn nasty. Because then, yeah, it got to the point where I left school and I just thought, well, I know what I want to do, so I may as well just do it. And thank God I didn't have parents that pushed me the other way.
Mm.
Well, so I went to drama school and I got an agent and so I'm just doing it the normal way.
Grand. What about you, Steve Williams?
Same drama school. I was a classically trained actor. Do you know RADA in London? Went there. From there, I got. Well, the funny thing is,
we're rivals then.
Yeah, I know. I instantly disliked you.
Shit. Did you see it in my eyes?
Yeah. I wanted to punch you across the room.
Yeah. Well, I'm trained.
Like so many cardboard boxes. And from there, I got bombed out after a year.
Did you?
Yeah.
What, they kicked you out?
Yeah.
RADA.
Yeah.
I didn't think they kept
me
that was.
Yeah.
Did they?
Yeah, yeah.
So that's quite cool, though.
Yeah, well, there's all this, celebrities on one wall, their pictures, and on the other wall is mine.
It's the one person.
It's like cracking the glass when my tutor's punched it.
Where were you drawn out?
Yeah.
You drawn out or you just left?
Just for laziness, general laziness.
Well, that's shit hard to get into.
Yeah, I know, but I was a stupid idiot. But I was very lucky. I got RSC. Straight from there. It's very,
like the Renegades.
RSC, Ready Steady Cook.
Oh, right.
And I was on. I was about 3 years sous chef to Ainsley Harriet.
So yeah.
But you're not answering the question. What was the moment you decided?
I was the moment.
Performance.
The moment I decided I was a performer was the moment I was out on the street and I was just thinking, well, I've blown it basically. You know, big chance I had.
No, before Rada.
Oh, before
Rada. You must have decided to be a performer. When you,
oh yeah, of course. Sleeping. Of course, yeah.
Why did you go to Rada?
If you're going to lie logically.
Oh yeah, of course. Yeah, that makes sense, doesn't it? So yeah, before Rada.
Sorry, lie properly.
Yeah, exactly. No, before Rada, I was in school play, and I was cast as a donkey, which...
Poor Jean.
Which the end that spoke the most sense. No, I was cast as a donkey.
Remember those days well?
I was cast as a donkey, and the school kind of pamphlet just said I was very convincing, and that I had a kind of bright future in the farmyard. You know, ahead of me, really. And, you know, I mean, I was a bit of a deep as well, you know. I really wanted to be a cockerel, but you don't get it all first time out, do you? Yeah. So, yeah, it was just a thrill of putting on the hair and just, you know, braying your way through Jesus Christ Superstar, you know. Is, you know, that's what it's about. The smell of the donkey fur and the look of a manger. So that was the very moment. When the three wise kings came in and went, nice donkey, I thought, yeah, I'm having that.
I was the tallest in my class and I was always cast as the wise old man or something with a beard
wise
and
old man.
Fucking robe.
He's the tallest.
I wish you'd been in my class because you could have taken that role. Exactly. And I could have been the pretty princess. It all went horribly wrong for me from then on. That's very good. It's a quick round on who's been the most honest. Penny Ashton. Brendan. Emma. Oh, can't believe it. Steve Williams.
Hang on a second. Ask him slowly because he made.
Sabrina torpedoed me after about 2 minutes.
He didn't get a chance to actually make their money. He went. Woof.
All right, very slow. Yes, you have to put your hand up.
Come this way.
Somebody. All right, Steve Williams. Has he been the most honest on this particular issue?
You clapped last time. I'm not changing mine.
That's entertaining.
Just likes donkeys.
Emma. Fantastic. Got one vote for Emma. Vote. Brendan. Oh. And Penny. Oh, it's a split vote. One each. Very good. Very good. Came across quite well. Right, the next question is, have you ever done something on stage or connected with your performance that you've regretted? Actually, I should start with Steve Williams.
Have I done anything I've regretted on stage? Does this count?
Yeah.
Next.
No. Probably the thing I regret most. Do you know the Sea Venues up around the corner? I did a. I don't know where we are. Oh yeah, up on just around there. It's like a big venue, and they used to have like a late night cabaret show. And there was this American comedian who was on who he wasn't doing that well, which is fine. It happens, you know. It was going on for quite a long, long time, and I was comparing, and he'd run over. He's supposed to do 10 minutes, and he was pushing on 20, and they were flashing the lights and all that. So I took all my clothes off, and I walked across the back of the stage, right, thinking, "Well, that's going to get him off, isn't it?" You know what I mean? I walked across the back of the stage.
It's gonna get him off.
What's that?
It's going to get him off.
Well, the idea being that you know he would just realise it's turned a bit fast, right? And I walked across the back of the stage. Crowd go. I walk off to the side, job done, turn around, he thinks he's ripping it, so just another 10 minutes. Yeah, so that's probably my biggest regret.
Emma?
It was quite recently, I did, I was not on stage, it was on camera, it was something for TV, and I was playing a love rival of Pauline Quirk, who's from Birds of a Feather, a bigger one.
You've got to fancy yourself over
her. Bigger than she was last time you've seen her on TV. She's quite big, and we had to do this love rival scene between the two of us, and I came up with the very clever idea that we should actually, it was in a prison, we should actually have a good old wrestle, because the director was getting all panicked because she didn't really know. So I just said, well, you know, I'm fine with it, we can just go for this is fine. And I said to Pauline, just do whatever you want, just completely go for it, and she broke my arm.
Oh my god!
She wrestled me to the ground, and she was kind of doing that, but as she came down, I don't think she realised how much weight was coming down on me and broke my arm.
And it was all on camera. And it was all on camera. And I haven't seen it yet. And it's going to be coming out in a couple of months. I don't know. Jesus. I don't know.
It's not like you did it again, I'd imagine.
Oh, God, no. Well, it was my last day and it was my last scene, so it was perfect. It was completely perfect. Well, was it completely perfect? No, it wasn't. It fucking hurt. Really hurt.
Oh, my God.
Have you just come out of plaster, then?
You are?
Have you just come out of plaster?
This was about 6 months ago.
All right.
Yeah.
Did she freak out?
You are?
Did she freak out?
Oh, my God. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Flowers.
Yeah, she tried to be funny. She's very, very, very funny woman. She's a complete star. But, no, she kind of tried to be funny about it, and that was just more offensive, so she just shut up and went.
Like, rushed off in an ambulance.
That was about 6 months ago, and it's all right now. Better.
Yeah.
And what about you, Brendan?
Just say pathetic.
Pathetic. Ha, fish and chips.
Say end.
End.
Right. I just end. It's end, isn't it?
Isn't the world a funny different place?
Anyway, I have two regrets that's come to mind. I don't know which one to actually.
Both.
Well, one of them was it was about 2 years ago. I was doing a show and I was doing this routine about different nationalities and different accents and different expressions and I had just done a whole routine on Irish people and how we can't speak properly, you know, and the Irish version of the English language, you know, and the Americans and Germans and French, and you know, and it was all within the context of, you see, so, and then just as I was about to talk about Japanese people, this guy walked in with his Oriental girlfriend, right? I didn't know he walked in. See, so I did this routine about this Japanese routine, and it basically involved going, right? And it was, you know, this conversation between two Japanese people was, and everyone was laughing because it was within the context of what I was talking about from the start. But when he came in with his girlfriend, he thought I had just started because he thought I saw him.
Oh.
And started the attack on his Oriental girlfriend. Oh. And he saw it as being completely racist. And when I finished my routine, I did something about Indians and people, and then I did something about... just generally, you know. And it was all taken within, as I said, the taste within the context of what I was trying to say, except for this guy. And so when I got off the stage, I was hosting the show, brought on the next guy, and I walked over to the table, the entrance, and I was looking through some papers, something like that. At a 45-degree angle, time kind of slowed down, and I saw this guy coming at me at a 45-degree angle, and there were steps down to where I was. So the steps actually, while he was coming down the steps, actually gave him the momentum to go a bit faster at me. And when I say he hit me, like, he hit me so hard, right, big bastard. Whack, and he caught me there, right? And like, I'm not exactly a small guy, you know, so I went up in the air, landed on my back, and he said, "You deserve that, you bastard." And he ran.
And he ran.
And you did that in a broad Irish accent.
Do you know what would have been great if you got encored and you had to go back on?
Well, I did go back on.
Right.
But, no, I had to actually go to the dentist to get x-rayed because the top of my tooth was lodged up into the fleshy part of my chin, or it was a broken jaw, they weren't quite sure.
Jesus.
And Jesus. So we all ran out after him, and he just went off into the distance. And I suppose one part of me regrets, maybe it's the man part of me, regrets not continuing to run, to find the fucker.
Yeah.
Then I probably would have, if I did corner him, I probably would have turned into a big
girl.
That was very rude.
Oh, wow.
It was bold, yeah. And so that's one of the first things that I regretted, I suppose, not, I don't know. Yeah, not regret doing the material because he didn't understand it. See, if you have two brain cells and you dilute those in alcohol, then it kind of divides the two brain cells into one brain cell. And then if you're a chav and with one brain cell, mix with alcohol.
It's homeopathy in reverse, isn't it?
Where was it, Brendan?
In a comedy club called Gibney's Malahide.
Which I run.
Was it Ireland?
Yeah.
It's your club in Ireland.
Yeah, it's my club in Ireland.
What? It's in your fucking club.
It's in my club, yeah.
Oh, my word.
What about you, Penny? Have you done anything you've ever regretted on stage? Or
well, it's a bit of a similar story. I did a sort of a preview gig on the way up here, and it was in Shoreditch. And my friend Runner, he's quite new to comedy. He was just in the So You Think You're Funny, one of the semis, and he was very excited. And so we organised this thing for me, and there was like a number of acts before me, and they'd gone really well. And then just before I went on stage, about six pikeys walked into the room. And I, like, they were just out of control, pissed already. And the bar kept serving them, which was fabulous. And I thought, shall I go, shall I have a talk to them or something? But no, I'll just get up on stage because I can handle it. I'm a big tough chick from New Zealand. And I got up on stage and they were just talking loudly all the way through, yelling out to me, calling me a whore, all this sort of stuff. Yeah, it was fantastic. They completely fucked it, actually. And at one stage, one came up to me, you're a terrible comedian, you should be shot, and all this sort of stuff. So it was quite depressing for me. That was my Edinburgh preview. So it was quite bad. And then last year I did my show, I was doing my show at the Caves, and it had gone really well. And I am a bit rude in my show, and I say a few bad words, ooh, and I'd said cunt in my show, and then I found out that Pam Ears was there. She'd come to see me do my comedy poetry show, and I'd realised I'd said cunt, and she was there.
The poet person,
Pam Ears.
Was she trying to rhyme something?
Opportunity Knocks?
Yes, from Opportunity Knocks in 1979. Yeah, but she came up and said she really enjoyed it afterwards.
But don't you think, when she's not actually doing her poetry, she's probably got a really dirty mouth?
No, because I interviewed her for a
kids and calls them cunts all the time.
I interviewed her for a newspaper paper and she said, I don't like blue jokes because I don't think I find them funny.
Blue. You know you've done for if they say blue.
Yeah, she said blue. But she loves Billy Connolly. I'm like, what do you keep your ears closed? I don't know. But yeah, but she liked it anyway. But I was like, oh my God. It's like doing it in front of your grandmother. What, doing it in front of your grandmother, but... So, can't. Anyway. La la la.
Very, very good. So, right, round of hands up for honesty from the part of Steve Williams.
That's obviously all... That's truth, wasn't it? You'll believe any of
a bunch of layers.
What about Emma? Good, you've got one vote. He's smiling at you a lot, though. I don't think it's to do with what you said.
That's all right, Brendan. I have to smile back.
That's it, I was with his partner.
And Brendan.
You don't believe me.
Penny.
You don't believe Brendan's story.
Oh, I believe.
Quite slow response this audience, aren't they? Probably stunned into submission.
Maybe you're shy.
What I
said.
Punch.
You can't remember what I said.
Yeah. That's a good question.
I'm proud of being punched in the face.
Tell them what I said.
If you're running downstairs, punch it. Right?
Yeah.
Coming at you. Gathering speed,
down. You a forensic scientist, by the way.
How come he threw you up in the air
with
a punch?
No, it was only three or four steps, you see. All I remember was the steps, you know. It was kind of like, you know, and he didn't hit me upwards. Bang, like that. And it hit me so hard. Like, maybe, obviously, well, yeah, he was on my level when he hit me. So I was like, I don't think I went up. The air, but it felt like
it wasn't the Dukes of Hazzard.
It was like my legs were sort of there and my head was there and then my back. And
Are you the kind of guy who kind of writes into websites and says, you know, in episode 37 of Superman, he ran faster. He ran faster than the train, yet clearly in episode 84 when
I'm just picturing this scene as you described.
Are you a barrister of law or
something? Yeah, exactly. Trying to explain it.
So we had three votes for Brendan, and what about Penny? How many votes for Penny? Oh, Penny, clear winner. You're doing very well here. You're doing very well. The next question, which I'm going to ask Emma first, how much time do you prepare, or what do you do to prepare every day?
Every day?
Yeah.
Well, just in case anybody that dreams me, I should say, at least 2 hours. I do a full vocal warm-up. Starting from kind of laying, and then I go through yoga and Pilates and Tai Chi, all mixed into one.
Called Pilates Yoga, my memory.
Which is all mixed into one very, very good exercise
smoothie.
Sequence. Very good. One smoothie, exercise smoothie I drink, then next. And then I do spend a little bit of time listening to my really dodgy meditation tape for a while. That takes about half an hour. Oh, God, because it's got some really terrible Casio keyboard in the background.
Aha. Aha tracks.
Yeah, but it calms me. And then after that, I do a bit of my Moo Moo Mamas, and as I'm walking through the streets, so that everybody can see that I'm an actress.
Do you know what Moo Moo Mamas are?
Moo Mamas. Well, I'll do the Budigas. They're probably best. Like Budigada, 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 for at least 40 hours.
I would freak out if you saw her doing that in a room. Budigada, Budigada, Budigada.
Or just heard it from the next door.
Running with an adrenaline shot through your back plate.
So I'd say about 2 hours, warm up, and then I'm ready to go when I get here, hopefully. But yeah, from home to venue, 2 hours.
And your show is sort of 9 o'clock in the morning tomorrow morning, so you're going to be starting at about
2:40. 2:40 in the afternoon.
You've got enough time to go through all that rigmarole.
That was the cartoon and actual noise. I always remember this cartoon from the comics. I actually remember reading the comic, and it was the sound effects of someone getting their head beaten in. Cartoon wise, which was boogada boogada bagada bagada boogada boogada bagada bagada.
A good one.
Boogada boogada bagada bagada boogada boogada. Pretty good for going boogada boogada bagada bagada bagada.
So is that how much time you prepare and write or work every day before your show?
I was standing in the first tee, and I said, Jesus, I better prepare the show. This is in Dublin before COVID. I had no preview shows, and so I had two preview shows when I came here. So I said, fuck it, I've got two preview shows. And some little underaged shit of a reviewer came in and reviewed my preview, you little fucking bastard. If I find out who you are, and I
could see it. What publication?
The Stage. I can't remember his name. But,
the evil in the Stage.
He just, I said, this is not my show. I'm trying this, I'm trying that, I'm trying the other thing. I'm just trying this, blah, blah. It's not my show. And he reviewed it, and so basically, I didn't John my agent. I said, I don't want to hear, So, but in regards to preparing, I don't do any boogada boogada bagada bagada or listen to tapes or I just kind of. I do remember a scene from. Remember that movie Midnight Express. Remember that movie Midnight Express?
I haven't seen it.
Where
the guy?
Drugs. Yeah, I know. He's sure to remember it. You must remember that.
Oh, it's one of the best movies. Alan, the actor.
Alan the actor.
Alan Parker, the director. It was basically about this guy who got caught in Turkey coming back with hashish, and he was given a life sentence. But there's a scene where he actually, before he gone, he had it all wrapped around his waist, and he before boarding the plane, and he went into the toilets, and he took his glasses off, and he looked at himself in the mirror, and he went. And that's about as much preparation as I do.
Is that the one where he ends up in the Turkish prison?
What?
Huh? Yes.
That's a horrible film.
Have you noticed that?
Exactly. Have you not seen that?
Plus the Xanax.
What about writing then?
0.25 mils.
Do you write material every day or not? Just make it up.
Well, actually, I met Dave McSavage last night. He's a colleague, a comedian of mine, and we sat at the. Where we up to some bar somewhere, and I had a pot of peppermint tea. We both had peppermint tea, actually. And in the conversation, I started telling him some dark stories of past, and I was telling him the story of going out with this girl that finished with me on the 22nd of December, and I ended up going over to some other girl that I met at a wedding 4 or 5 years beforehand, and I got plastered drunk in her house on Boxing Day. And I got so drunk that this couple came over to visit her that evening, and he was an English soldier working in Northern Ireland, and I was so drunk I just fucking just completely was obnoxious to him, and then fell asleep on the sofa, and I said something to her obnoxious, and then she kicked me out, and I went around from B&B to B&B on Boxing Night next day morning, out of my face, trying to get somewhere to stay. Feeling that I should have been with Lillian in her house in Wexford with her mother and father and the kids and Christmas presents and the whole Christmas thing, and there I was. And I eventually couldn't get anywhere. I came back, fell asleep on her driveway, and then it started raining. I stood up and I went down to the garden, and I got into her garden shed. This is in Yorkshire. And I heard this knock on the door, and the door opens, and this guy, I heard his voice saying, excuse me, sir, would you have to step out this way, please? And I was put into handcuffs, put into the back of this police van, and I start crying. I said, I should be with Lillian. And they checked my wallet, and they saw my extra vision card or something, and discovered then I wasn't an IRA mobile unit. And he said, use that in your show? I said, what the fuck is funny about that? I said, well, that's excellent. That's what actually seems to be here in Edinburgh. The more darker the story, the more real that you talk from your heart, the more people want to hear it. And whether it's put in comedy or real drama, it doesn't matter the fuck, people want to hear it.
So you don't write material, you just talk about what you've
I lived. Talk about what I live through.
Yeah.
What I do. Yeah.
And do you sit down and formally like structure that, or just like?
Well, I might jot it down, all right. But I don't actually pace up and down. The only way I actually write material is I might discuss the concept with a friend of mine who was a doctor from years ago that I used to work with in the lab, and he's just brilliant mind, and he comes up with a punchline for me out of the whole scenario.
Can I have him as a friend as well?
It's brilliant.
What's his name?
Dr. Rob Conney is his name.
Where does he live?
Dublin.
I'm finding him.
Dr. Conney?
Dr. Conney. C-U-N-N-E-Y. C-U-N-N-E-Y.
Oh, no.
Care of Dublin.
That sticks his own punchline on it, doesn't it?
Because he gave me this punchline of which can I tell you, actually what happened was, there was a story that happened, and I was just telling him what happened, and he kind of came in and he says, can you imagine that this happened, right? And basically the story is that a friend of mine, didn't happen to me, came out of a pub years and years and years ago, and he was pissed out of his face, trying to get a taxi home in Dublin, right? And he's trying to get a taxi, just standing in the middle of the road, taxi, discovered, this is a very shortened version of the story, right? He discovered he had no money to get a taxi home, right? And he was walking home, he was miserable, and for some reason he put his hand in his back pocket and he found a pound coin, right? Now, it's an amazing phenomenon, isn't it, that a bag of chips can shorten your walk home. I mean, you're miles from home. You're miles from home, and then you have one chip in your house. Right, two chips, you go past the house. Two chips, you end up in Malaysia. Anyway, so he bumps out this big bag of chips, right? This happened, right? This is the shortened version. Right? Big bag of chips, right? And just as he was about to have the first chip, he put his hand in his top pocket. For some reason, he found his cash card. He went, didn't know I had that. Excellent, I'm going to get some money out of the machine. I don't care how long it takes him to get home now because I have my chips. Probably have my chips in the taxi on the way home. Probably wake up in the morning with my wife in this pillow and my chips in this pillow. And I look at my wife and go, Jesus, oh, there's a bag of chips. Doesn't matter, right? And he went over to the machine, right? He went over to the machine. And I was telling Rob the story, right? And the bit I told him was that he put the card in and the visor, the window bit, this is years ago in Dublin, the visor of the cash card machine came up. And it says, please enter your PIN number. And as he did that, he put his chips down. And he went, beep, 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 beep. And the thing says, your request has been processed, please wait. And he was going, come on, come on, come on. Then suddenly it said, your card has been retained, please contact your branch. And the card went, and the window went. And his chips were left in the cash card machine. Right? And I was telling Rob the story. And he said, and then he just continued with the story. Because he says, can you imagine what it would have been like for the next guy? Like, who left the chips in the cash card machine, you know? Because your man just walked home, he left his chips in the cash card machine, right? So Rob's bit then, which he came in, the first bit was true, but Rob's bit was kind of for stage production, you know? Yeah, yeah. And his bit was then, can you imagine the next guy who came along? So hang on a second, Frank, we'll all be home in a minute, I'm just going to put my card in here. He went to the card, oh Jesus, there's a bag of chips. Can I have a cheeseburger and onion ring and a batter sausage, please? So that didn't happen, but Rob's story.
Comes off it, yeah. Brilliant. What about you, Penny?
Yeah, preparation, like on the day, I do a vocal warm-up as well, because I do some singing and stuff, but I think I need to do some more, because I'm sounding a bit husky at the moment. But yeah, I probably do about, I've got one on a little MP3 player, actually, I plug into my ear and sing it for about a quarter of an hour, and do that, because I'm doing all my own flyering.
What kind of singing was it? Is it operatic, or is it just plain?
No, I just, it's, you know, throaty. Sort of dumb, dirty singing stuff. There we go. Because I'm flying, I fly up until half an hour before my show starts, so I don't really have the time to do other things. But as far as writing is concerned, I often write, my peak time of writing is between like 12 a.m. and 3 a.m. So I sort of like sit down at my computer, and because I write poetry, generally the poem comes first, and then I build the stand up around the poem. That's how it's done. Like when I first started doing gigs, in 10 minutes I'd do like 10 poems, but now I'll do 3. Have the stand-up around it, and that sort of grows with it as I do it. So yeah, I don't really sort of sit down and... I do that with poetry, but not so much with stand-up. But I'd like to get into that more, because I'd like to expand that part of it a little bit more.
So I find I have completely brilliant, such fantastically funny ideas at that little moment between waking and being awake.
Right.
And I sort of sometimes sit in the middle of the night, and I lean over and I write this genius stuff down. And then I look at the morning, apart from being incapable of reading my own handwriting, I look at it and I go, what?
Yeah.
And I know that there was that little moment where I was just thinking, oh, I'll fucking kill
the world. Yeah, everyone has that, doesn't it?
I know, but that's what I'm saying.
Just before you go to sleep. It's kind of, you know.
Mine's just as I'm waking up, and then I fully wake up.
Paul
or whatever.
McCartney used to write it.
Paul McCartney used to write.
Are you saying I'm a Paul McCartney of comedy, you reckon?
No, I'm just saying
a little bit more of an audience.
No. But whether it be music or whether it be stand-up or whatever, he used to write, and everyone knows that. He used to write on the
used
wall.
To write when?
He used to wake up in the middle of the night, and he used to write on the wall beside his bed in his mother's house.
His mother's house?
In Liverpool. Yeah. When he used to live with his mother.
Did he?
And the guy who actually bought that house, I went on the Beatles Magical Mystery Tour. At least the last time I was in Liverpool. Fascinating trip, by the way. And it went into that story. And the guy who actually bought the house before the council got it or whatever, anyway, he actually was a DIY freak.
And he plastered
it all down.
Oh, God. Mm. So I do a combination of that, and then I do a combination of sitting down and really trying to write up things that have happened to me and making them sound funny. So I do a combination of that, and then when I'm emceeing, I try not to do any material at all and just try and wing it with whatever.
So have you ever used what you've written on when you've woken up, that between making up and...
Extremely rarely. Yeah. And I don't know what it is, but...
Have you ever woken up beside somebody that you met the night before and go, excuse me, hang on a second, I just want to write this.
Could you remember this for me? I'll ask you in the morning, yeah? I'll leave your notebook at home.
And remember the laughter, that was even more important material. So, I'm talking about a general sense, because the festival's always exceptional in how you prepare material, but in a general sense, Penny, do you, like, try and sit down every day at your desk and sweat over a hot typewriter?
Not every day, no. It's usually when the muse comes upon me, whatever that is. And it tends to happen in the middle of the night. So sometimes I do sit down and go, I've got this idea. Like, and I've had ideas, like I had one about a poem called Hot Guy on the Plane, about how you always sort of see sexy guys on the plane and you sort of wonder what's going on with them. I do, anyway. And I had an idea to write about it for like a year, and I finally finished it and stuff. So some things come straight away, and some take a little bit more work, much like...
I've moved back from Australia, and I've always dreamed to find a hot guy. I've never, ever had one. I've really not... And this, I thought, this time it's going to be true. And it was an 86-year-old woman. She was a sweetie, she really was. But for 36 hours, she sold me on getting married to her son. And that, you know, and he was about 52, which is, you know, that's cool. But and she described him as wearing a lot of leather, leather jacket, leather trousers. He liked motorbikes, and he went to this pub called the Coal Hun in Earl's Court, which is a notorious gay hangout. And she had no idea. And she'd always got lots of lovely friends, lots of lovely loyal friends. Yeah. Never had a female girlfriend. I don't understand why. Never had a girlfriend. I'm sitting there for 36 hours wanting to scream at this poor lady. You know, your son's a gay.
I've had a nightmare. This show has been the first time that I actually decided to do some writing. And so I had Gertrude Stein as a like icon that I wanted to write about. But I was going to have me as a character in it too, that Emma was going to be learning about Gertrude Stein. So I started writing this Emma character. First rehearsal I did of reading the Emma character, I realised I can't write at all because I've watched too many episodes of Dawson's Creek. I sound like Dawson.
Oh, Jesus.
It's awful. And now I'm never going to be able to get rid of it because it's in my blood. All of those... I've watched every fucking episode and I'm so ashamed of myself. And this is the karma that it's done to me. It's just... I can't write. So then the Emma character was scrapped and it's all Gertrude's own words. I was like... I ain't a writer.
Right.
Unless I'm going to write an American sitcom, then I'll be all right, hopefully.
Yeah. What about you, Stevie?
What about me? What was the question again? I can't remember.
I know,
it's so
I just
long.
Changed the question.
How do you prepare?
How do you write your material or prepare your material? If you do at all?
Yeah, well, I'm similar to, you know, all you guys. The kind of, you know, fall asleep thing, like Paul McCartney. You know that kind of...
Shower is a good place, isn't it?
The shower. Well, I've never fallen asleep in the shower, but, you know...
Well,
I'm writing.
Oh, writing.
I just think, I think any time when you're like, your mind's clear and there's nothing distracting.
Cold water, wake up.
In the toilet, your mind's clear.
You never know, you have genius ideas in the toilet.
I've never. No. But Paul McCartney used to write on the toilet roll at his mum's house.
Okay.
Yeah, and the guy who moved in after him threw it away. He's a cleanliness freak.
Ah.
Yeah.
It's an echo around here, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. but yeah, I just, you know, just before you go to sleep, I'm do what you do, and just scroll things down sometimes. But they're never funny. You know? I mean, you do wonder. I mean, if that was the case, that was the best time to write. I mean, narcoleptics would be the best fucking comedians in the world, wouldn't they? You know, just like, you know. But
Because I remember that time when the Queen Mother's funeral, the day of the funeral, you did 20 minutes of stuff about the funeral.
Yeah, but then I'm an anti-violist, so it wasn't hard.
Yes!
Exactly.
Could wait for this one.
But there was a lot
I've been like the BBC. Sorry?
There was a lot of material that was actually very good.
Oh yeah, but I was like the BBC. I'd had that material on standby for about 30 years, waiting to die.
It's called preparation.
Exactly.
You rehearsed it every morning, weren't you?
Exactly. And it was the one night in my life when it all came to fruition.
Very, very good. Right, so a vote of hands, if you can remember what anybody said. It doesn't matter. on who's been the most honest? Penny Ashton.
Oh,
Penny.
One streak over.
I never know whether that's good or bad. Next, Brendan. Oh, very good.
Brendan always has it.
That was half a hand, wasn't it? That was like, you know,
I was a wave.
She's I couldn't be arsed putting my hand up. Yeah, was that? Yeah, was that a wave or like, yeah, hello, hi?
And Emma. Oh, very good.
You are click when it went up then, didn't it?
What about Steve Williams?
Well, the throw it off. Throw it off. What you off?
I think it was half and half between Brendan and Emma. Right, next question. Do you think success will spoil you, Steve Williams?
Yes, hope so. Exactly.
How will it spoil you?
How will it spoil me? I don't know. I just want to get, you know, it'd just be great, wouldn't it, to just be such a talent and then just to throw it all away. So it's like George Best-esque. That'd be the dream, I guess, wouldn't it? So then you've got like 40 years then to reflect on what could have been, you know. That's better than making it, isn't it? I mean, you know, that's better than making it, is being able to reflect and go, you know. Because then you're bulletproof. Anybody could say, you know, yeah, you know, you did this. Like Ricky Gervais at the moment, he's on a hide into nothing. He's written another good show, but people are saying it's not as good as The Office and all that kind of thing. But if you never make it, they can never shoot you down. They can always go, he could have been brilliant. He could have been brilliant. Sorry? Tupac wasn't bulletproof.
Jesus.
All right, in the hood. Tupac wasn't bulletproof. But yeah, I wasn't planning to get mowed down in some kind of comedy drive-by. I was thinking more along the lines of dying with a bevy of hookers around me or something like that. Just my face imprinted in a big bowl of Coke or something. But to do that, I guess I've got to get into hookers and Coke.
Why did you look at me?
The whole panel was...
Because I'm doing busty rhymes.
Yeah, I don't know. I hope. I mean, I hope everyone's successful who's here, and hope it. You know.
Oh, he's such a nice guy, Steve Williams, isn't he?
No.
Emma, what about you? Do you think success? Are you prepared for success?
Oh God, yes. And I've been prepared from the moment that you walk out of drama school. They build you up to think that this is it. Your Hollywood is a calling. And when you end up on fucking Radio 4. Playing a corpse on radio. And I don't joke.
Do you know, I went to an audition once to play a dead person on a tray for the Geography Channel.
We're gonna have like
I thought I was going to a proper audition.
Yeah.
And they ran in, and all I had to do was lay on the tray. I travelled like 2 hours to get this audition, lay on the tray like that. I said, right, Steve, you're playing the guy on the train, aren't you? I said, what we want to do is we're going to give you some injections and this tonight. And then what we want to do is you're going to have a heart attack, all right? Like the first time they did it, I just laid there for like the whole run through. I thought, fuck, I've really fucked that up. But the second time they did it, they came around and said, right, the director was telling the actor guy, saying, you know, can you just put a bit more kind of angst into this moment, you know, you love this guy all. And they said, you know, 200 milligrams of EPO and all that kind of thing. And he said, he's arresting. So I thought, this is my big moment. I just went...
Did you get the part?
No.
Why not? That was good.
He's arresting, not shagging.
Yeah, exactly. They well, said, we'll call you back when we've got a part for an epileptic.
It's a medical problem. Oh, no.
Well, I was there, and I got onto Radio 4. They've got like a rep company that do stuff. So I was like, yes, I've made it. And big names do radio, like the afternoon plays and stuff. So I'm there, and Bill Nighy's there, and Juliet Stevenson. So this is one of my first like jobs after drama school. So I was like, oh, I've made it. I've actually done it. Fuck all of my friends who are temping. I've done it. I don't care. This is it. I hope I'm spoiled. This is great.
And we did the whole day, and I hadn't got the script for that role, because you do so many plays, so you kind of get scripts as you go. And it was getting later and later, and I was, like, really nervous and not saying anything, just kind of there waiting. I wonder when I'm on, I wonder what I'm doing, I'm not quite sure yet. So I went in, and they said, you know, this is a scene where Juliet's going to find you, and you're going to be a junkie dying. So I was like, okay, I got junkie dying, I can do junkie dying sounds.
Big veins.
Like, mic techniques. Doing all of that stuff. And they stopped. And in a radio studio, you can't see your director. They're just like in a box miles away. You just have this tannoy, which is the voice of God comes in. So there's silence. So you finish your take and there's silence. And it's not a good silence. Everybody's just there going, do they like it? Do they not? We've got to do 15 other takes. Or am I one take wonder? So we're all there. And we get the one bit of tannoy noise come across. Really booming voice saying, Emma, we're going to go again. Can we cut the breathing? But I was so nervous that I didn't like go, does that mean I can go or some? I just didn't say anything, so I'm there with Juliet Stevenson just kind of going and action.
It's on radio.
Did they ask you back? No, that was the end of your career in the radio for drama group.
And in the empty seat we
that
have
is
Emma.
Such a sad story, Emma.
I know.
Even your breathing was rubbish.
So I want success to spoil me. I deserve it.
So oh, that's fantastic.
I'm glad somebody does. My
I always did. Wanted to make a whole film, a series of outtakes of women discovering bodies, because it's always like, oh, yeah. I always wanted a whole, and me discovering a body was like, you know.
You tut if you discovered a body.
That's my impersonation of a Londoner after the bomb's gone off the next day, when London is covered with fear and panic. It's all over the Evening Standard. And everywhere I went in London the following day, people would go saying, because I had to walk.
Oh, Penny, what about you? Would success spoil you?
I'd like it to spoil me with, like, round-the-world trips and lots of champagne and some boys on tap and things like that. But, I mean, I don't know. I mean, we've all done our shitty things. Like, I think that when you get out of drama school, it's like your final year, you know, like you're in prison. And you get to the end and you're the top dog and everyone thinks you're the shit. Right. And you get out in the real world and everyone thinks you're scum.
And you cry.
Yeah, that's what it's a bit like when you get out of drama school, because they were like, yay, we're amazing. And everyone's like, yeah, down the bottom. And, you know, we've all done it. Like, I do a lot of theatre sports, like improv, corporate improv, and like, roaming characters, like, you know, doing dinner theatre as a dominatrix and stuff like that. Just fabulous fun. My best audition, I did an ad, and they wanted me to do gymnastics on a beam. And I thought, oh, yeah, this is cool. And then I found out that the ad was for reinforced wood. They wanted, like, a heavy girl to do gymnastics on a beam. Oh. And, yeah, that was great. So, stuff like that, I'll be happy to say goodbye to. I've been basically in New Zealand. I just want to earn enough money that I don't have to worry about where I'm going to eat, you know, sort of thing. And that's
you can pick and choose your jobs a bit more.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I like the corporate theatre sports stuff, but the roaming characters sometimes can be quite demeaning. But it's what's kept me alive for the last 5 years, so that's great. You know, so you just got to take the work where you can. But I would like it to spoil me. I just like it so I can exist perfectly nicely in the manner that I'm accustomed without having to scrape around the bottom of the barrel.
Go on, what about you, Brendan?
What was the question about being successful?
He's already successful.
I know, that's what I'm asking. I'm
spoiled?
Interested to hear his answer, because he's
what's
already
successful?
A star.
What's success? I mean,
would you,
would it spoil
success
you?
Spoil you? But you're already there.
Making it is quite a...
What is making it?
I mean, you were in Father Ted, weren't you?
I mean, but I was paying. I had this conversation with Ardal Hanlon, actually. Now, I mean, he's in Father Ted. That's being in Father Ted. Like, my part was if you press the pause button on your remote control. Oh, there's Brendan. Yeah.
I thought it was 4 Irish actors playing all the priests. I thought there were loads of the same.
No, I think if you weren't in Father Ted, and then you weren't successful.
Is that Lord of the Rings?
But I was just having this discussion with him, like, what is successful? And he, like, I said to him, so what are you up to at the moment? Walking on the first fairway, you know. So what are you doing now, Ardal? And he said, oh, I'm doing a bit of writing. And I said, what about the TV? Oh, I'm trying to get with that fucking TV stuff. I said, Jesus. You know, you kind of put into focus. Like, here he is, you know, he's kind of whinging about being on TV. He wants to get into something else. So I think no matter what you have in life, you always want more and more and more and more. I think, you know, success to me is what you do for others. Rather than for yourself.
Is that a lie or is that true?
Actually, can I tell you a story? Actually, I'm not being self. What's the word for self?
Righteous.
yeah, whatever. But I had this incident that happened during the week, and I haven't told the story, but well, I have last night. But I just anyway, the reason this happened, right? I was walking along, was flyering down at the Mall, the
Royal Mall.
Yeah, just on the way down there, past the Chinese restaurant there, and there's a homeless guy sitting just at the station there. And I walked past him, and he was begging. And I went past him and said, listen, I'll get you on the way back. So I went into the Chinese restaurant, did my flyering. I was coming back up, and I walked past him again. I went, oh, shit. And he looked at me, and I said, I just told him I'm going to give him something on the way back. So I gave him... I gave him 50 pence. And he said to me, thanks very much. He says, you're the only person who gave me something on the way back. Everyone says that.
Oh,
everyone says that to me. I'll get you on the way back. And I went, oh, I see. And so my next line, because he engaged me in conversation, I said, right. So I gave him one of my flyers, right? And he looked at it and he went, oh, right. And then I thought, I said, hang on a second, you know, you can't afford it. So, and then I gave him a complimentary ticket. I said, why don't you indoors for a while later on? So I forgot about him, went up to the show. I arrived at the show, and when I went out on stage, there he was, sitting right up the front. Right, he laughed at every single punchline I used on stage. Everything. He laughed the whole way through the show. And at the end of the show, he came up to me, looked for my autograph.
Oh.
Gave him the autograph. He said his name was Paul, and he went back out into the streets begging again. And I just thought, like, you know, that for me, you know, I know it sounds kind of like, oh, I'm so fucking good. You know, but I don't mean it. I just, that's what happened.
It's just a simple gesture that makes
me
feel
and
good.
And it was a gesture, yes, that I felt really sort of, you know, actually, I'm not a bollocks after all.
Did he have a pint?
Yeah, actually, that's I regret not buying him a drink.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah. I shook hands with him when I went to the stage. I went, hello, how are you? How's it going? And then I go, you know, I should have bought him a pint.
Well, I mean, because one of the reasons I asked this question, because I think it's really interesting that you work so hard to get recognition, and then when you get it, you get all confused. Because I actually emceed Ardle about 3-4 weeks ago in London.
All right.
And he's finished doing My Hero and he's doing another series for BBC. And, you know, he's not the best stand-up comic, but he's a really nice stand-up comic. He's very popular. But walking into that... Yeah,
he's brilliant.
He's not brilliant. There's others that are very, very brilliant, but he's good. But you walk into the space and the energy from the audience, because they know him and they love him and he's successful, and you just get this quivering of excitement that he's going to go on and do his stuff. And a lot of it was new. That's what I meant. A lot of it was new material because he's doing a tour from September or something. Yeah. So, you know, he wasn't going for, you know, the superstar stuff. And that's, again, what I loved about him. He's humble enough to try out new, untested material with this audience. It was just, oh, God, how exciting to see him.
It's the same wherever you go. I mean,
and he's such a nice bloke. And I would say his success hadn't spoiled him, even though he wants other things. And sometimes you can come across working with people who shall remain nameless, who have a modicum of success. And I treat one appallingly. And I'd much rather have that thing where my peers are actually kind of getting on with me and I'm getting that thing from you.
Well, they're the ones you have to hang out with the most, a lot of the time, in the working environment.
Yeah. Mm.
This whole thing is very handily, pretty much the core of my show and my story, because Gertrude kept going and kept going and kept going and is an icon to an awful lot of people now. And she didn't hit success until she was 59. And when it came, and she had her bestseller across America, and she was big, big-time celebrity, she couldn't write a word. And she fought, not being published, publishing her own work for 59 years, and she had 200 publications that she did herself, and she kept at it. And from researching her work, actually, do you know what I mean? I'm 24. If I complain, I should just shut up. I've got to just... keep going. And she did it, and every year apparently at the festival there's been a show about Gertrude. There is always. And she died about 60 years ago, so all fair play to the lady. She waited that long, and then she got lost, like you said. It's that thing of she lost her personality, she said. It went, because there was no fight. She was the fight. And the fight went, and there was nothing left anymore.
She's, well,
it's fascinating.
200 publications is a fair old outfit, isn't it?
Old fight. So I hope it's not going to be that long.
Right, quick round then. Last round, because we've got to wind up, because there's a show coming in here at 2:30. So we need to... If you want to ask any questions of any of the people here and talk about their shows or whatever, please meet us upstairs for a drink right, so that we can clear this room. So last round, to see who do you think has been the most honest? Penny Ashton.
Oh, he's a liar.
You can't even remember what she said, can you?
You can be my shirt.
Brendan Burke.
Oh, for fuck's sake. Yeah.
We like you.
Steve Williams. And finally, Emma. Oh, Emma's won again. You know, Emma's won overall. Very well done.
It's my honest
and Steve Williams hasn't lying. Scored a single point.
How many points did I get?
You got two. But you shared one of them with Emma.
So you could say it's half each.
Penny got one.
Favourite awards.
So round of applause for yourselves and for the acts, and we'll see you.